The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Welcome to Between the Links with your host, Mike Heck.
All right, the iconic voice of Esther Lynn welcomes you to a brand new edition of Between the Links as we bring you an MMA fighting versus MMA fighting matchup this week. With a lot to discuss coming out of a very busy week of action, another busy week is upon us in the world of mixed martial arts. Bellator has another event on Thursday night, headlined by Darian Caldwell versus AJ McKee. What a ridiculous fight that is. And then UFC 255 is coming up on Saturday. Really fun card, two flyweight title fights, so let us get into it right now. Let's introduce the combatants first. Victorious last week on the program, he defeated Jose Shorty Torres. Then he called out one Sean Alshadi. Unfortunately, that is not going to happen this week. Sean will be paying close attention to this matchup, he tells me. From the A side, Mr. Jose Youngs. How are you, my friend?
Sean's not going to pay attention. He knows I'm going to win. So he's basically like, I know I'm going to face Jose next. So this is just a formality. So I guarantee he's not paying attention now, because I know as of recording this, some crazy news with the Phoenix Suns is happening. So I feel like his mind is elsewhere. But he knows I'm going to win. So it's only a matter of time before I throw down with my fellow Arizonan, Sean Alshadi.
Well, Jose's got to get by this week, and he's got a heck of a matchup ahead of him. Man looking to extract a little revenge. The co-host of On to the Next One, the soothing voice of the weigh-in shows, which will return this Friday ahead of UFC 255. The Prince of Positivity himself, Mr. Alex Gailey. AK, nice to see you again, my friend.
Hi, everyone. I'm not Sean, as you can see. I am AK Lee. I'm my own man. Happy to fill in for Sean. I imagine he was headed into a collision course with Jose. Could be headed into a collision course for next week, but I am here possibly to play spoiler, or at the very least, injure Jose in such a way that he goes into his duel with Sean less of a man.
You think I need to be 100% to beat Sean?
Wow.
Come on.
Wow.
Listen, you can say that crap about me, all right? You don't say that crap about Sean Alshadi.
Crap or honesty?
straight up crap.
Right.
Wow. Well, we're off to a great start here. There have been people asking me, where the hell is Phoenix Carnevale? I have been trying. She's been very busy as of late. We're going to try to get her back on at some point. We have to figure out what to do with the championship here. And we'll figure that out down the road. But let's begin this matchup. Let's begin with Saturday night in Las Vegas. We had Rafael Dos Anjos successfully returning to the lightweight division, defeated a very game Paul Felder via quote-unquote split decision. Absolutely ridiculous that I have to say those words into a live microphone. But RDA looked pretty darn good in the fight. We talked all about it on the post-fight show. If you want to get our specific thoughts on the fight itself, go back into the archives and check those out. But AK, we'll begin with you this week. You were very high on Mr. RDA heading into the fight. He emerges victorious against Paul Felder. Before we get into what this all means, and we discussed this on the preview show a little bit, as good as he looked in this fight, did the impact of the victory mean as much now that you see it compared to what it could have been against Islam Makhachev? Like, despite Felder being ranked five spots higher, did it have the sort of impact that RDA would have hoped for?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely did. Look, Felder is a more well-known fighter than Islam Makhachev. I mean, that's undeniable. He just has more exposure, of course, in his role as a broadcaster. And he's got a style that's a little more fan-friendly for people. So in a way, even though the fight was put together in less than a week, they kind of got a more high-profile fight among, I guess, if we're talking about like casuals and mainstream, than Makhachev RDA was. Of course, hardcores know that Makhachev RDA was really stronger implications for the title picture, right? But aside from just his performance, how good he looked, like the timing couldn't be better because, again, we don't know what's going on with Khabib, but it sounds like either he might take a fight, at another weight class, or we don't know if he's defending the title again. And he could stay retired. Dana White, of course, has been saying that might not be the case, but right now, I'm comfortable saying we don't definitively have a lightweight champion. So the field is wide open, and after this win, there are fights ahead of Dos Anjos that are very winnable for him. As you mentioned, I was very high on him in the previous show. I picked him to beat Felder by decision. I think a lot of people did, but there was definitely some doubters as to what was left because he's got a little bit of a slump competing at 170 pounds. But at lightweight, I really never felt he lost that much. I know he lost that before. Felder, his most recent fight, he lost to Tony Ferguson. It's Tony Ferguson. That doesn't say anything about Dos Anjos' diminishing skills. At his age, is he at 90%, 80% of what he was in his prime? Yeah, probably. That's still good enough to beat a lot of the division and good enough to beat someone who I think he would face. I mentioned this on our matchmaking show. Someone who I think he could face in a vacant title fight, vacant lightweight title fight, Justin Gaethje. I think Rafael Dos Anjos could win that fight. I think if he ends up fighting the winner of Poirier versus McGregor, I think he can win that fight. So not just is he still, I think, one of the top five best lightweights in the world, the opportunity is there and the right matchup is there for him to become a champion again.
Jose, the reason that I bring this up, because, heading into the fight, it was, oh my God, Paul Felder is a legend. He's a hero for stepping in to save the day. And RDA, in a strange way, became kind of an afterthought in this fight. And again, after the fight, he makes headlines getting the win. He's getting Conor McGregor's attention. But the story became Paul Felder taking the fight without stepping into an MMA gym in 4 months. Paul's not retiring. Paul's calling out those pesky weight missers. And it feels like in a weird way, RDA's win is kind of lost in the shuffle. That's how I feel. Do you feel the same way?
It might be lost in the shuffle in terms of headlines and what people are talking about, because, again, Paul Felder is a very charismatic individual. He knows how to use his mic time perfectly. Like, you give Paul Felder a live mic, he's going to take advantage of it to say whatever. Rafael Dos Anjos hasn't really been the type of person to, grab headlines outside of what he says. I know he'll tweet a few things, but he doesn't really captivate the audience with his microphone skills. He does that inside the octagon, as he said, at his media day. He just wants to fight, and he thinks if you're ready to fight, you should fight whoever. That's what he did. So, yes, his big win is lost in the headlines, but let's not forget, he picked up the win. He's in the W column. He gets the second half of his paycheck. So I think that's, in the end, more important, because now we're talking about, what are we talking about? We're talking about him facing all these guys in the top five, possibly fighting for vacant lightweight title. If you ask Paul Felder, I guarantee you he would probably want that position rather than to dominate the headlines. What he says he wants to be, who could Paul Felder fight for the vacant lightweight title? Who could Paul Felder fight in the top five of the lightweight division? We're not talking about Paul Felder in that regard. We're talking about Rafael Dos Anjos in that regard. So, yes, he is lost in the headlines, but I don't think he really cares. And I think Paul Felder would much rather be in Rafael Dos Anjos' position.
So, Jose, if he fought Makhachev in one, or if he fought anybody else in one, do you feel like we'd be having the same conversation right now?
If it would depend on how he wins. If he squeaks out a narrow decision, then we're probably talking about, like, did he deserve to win? Did he do this and that? It also, I think, would have to do a lot with how his fellow fighters respond. If he goes out there and knocks out Islam Makhachev in about 30 seconds, people are going to be calling for him to fight Khabib again because of what he did to Khabib's brother, teammate, and all that kind of stuff. If he goes out there and squeaks out a controversial decision, I don't think Conor McGregor is going to be tweeting about him. So, yeah, I guess if he beat Islam Makhachev, he'd probably do more in terms of the Dagestani audience, because we all know the Dagestani audience and fans is one of the most vocal in all of mixed martial arts. Michael Chandler himself said the second he said he wasn't going to fight Islam Makhachev, his DMs exploded. And now everyone at Dagestan knows who Michael Chandler is. probably the same case if Rafael Dos Anjos had beaten Islam Makhachev, regardless of how it is, but he didn't. So it's, I don't know how, I don't know if he had, if I don't know, because he didn't, he beat Paul Felder. If he had beaten Conor McGregor, sure, he'd be the biggest star in the world right now, but he didn't. He beat Paul Felder and he's in the win column. And now we're talking about what's next for Rafael Dos Anjos.
What do you think, AK? I mean, I feel like the impact of the win just wasn't, I don't know. I just feel like it's not there on a Monday as you're recording. You know what I mean? Like most of these main events, we're talking about a Monday and Tuesday. And I don't think it's really fair to RDA. I thought he performed pretty well. And it's not his fault that Makhachev got hurt and he fought a guy who hadn't trained in 4 months. Still, he went out there and had a fun fight. I mean, Felder wasn't lost out there. He had his moments and he beat RDA up a little bit at different times in the fight. In fact, even one judge scored it for Paul Felder. So at the end of the day, should RDA be getting a little more of a rub on this Monday?
Yeah, I mean, look, we said like the buildup, a lot of it revolved around Felder stepping in, and it is not RDA's fault that Judge Chris Lee lost his damn mind and scored the fight 48-47 for Felder. Maybe the 50-45s were a bit much. I don't know if you want to give a round to Felder, maybe two, but giving him the fight was patently absurd. I think it's fair to say so. But look, you're right. But look, this is what we're talking about, right? So it does say a little bit about how much of an impact the actual win itself had. But I think when people look back on it, and I think anyone who actually watched the fight, I don't know what the viewership numbers were. Like I said, as much as I said, it's his chances of getting another title shot or about how the landscape of lightweight looks right now, I don't want to discount what he did, you know, what he did to win the fight. He looked again a lot like the old RDA. I think it was our man in the truck, Casey Lydon, who said he thought it could look, or maybe it was Jose who said it could look like the Pettis fight. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of the 5-round championship win that RDA had against Pettis. Maybe not as well. No, I mean, it reminded me of it a lot. So if that's the RDA that you saw, that you feel like you saw on Saturday, then, I mean, again, how can you not see him as a factor and see him as back near the top of the division? He just turned 36, as did I. So, you know, I might be a little biased. This is one for the 36 years young guys. Okay, so I'm rooting for RDA to get it. I can't lie.
So, I mean, RDA shoots for the stars. He calls for Connor. Pretty unlikely to happen anytime soon, but you never know ahead of January 23rd. We are in a very strange time in the world. But AK, when you look at RDA, and you kind of talked about what the landscape of this division looks like with some of the names that are up there, but the main reason he wanted to go back to 55 is that he feels he could be the champion once again. So did that performance, did that fight, did that win make you feel like, you know what, I think he can get back there, or do you still need to see some more before making that decision?
I think he can't. Look, Khabib is the only guy who I would say, Khabib, as long as Khabib is around, let's say tomorrow he announces that he's not retired. Guess what? Nobody, I don't think anybody is getting the lightweight title that's not named Khabib. So that's not just RDA. That'd be Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier, Justin Gaethje, Tony Ferguson, anyone you want to name. Khabib is the guy to beat. But if he's out of the picture, RDA is more than just in the mix. Like I said, I can't imagine him being more than if he's an underdog at all to some of these names, more than like a 150 underdog to a Poirier, McGregor, Gaethje, the guys I just named. Maybe Ferguson, because Ferguson's already beaten him, so I'd understand if Ferguson was heavily favored. That's about the only name. Otherwise, he has the skills, just skill-wise, to match up with any of these guys of 155, you know? I know the age is a big sticking point for some people, but just from what we saw on Saturday, it didn't look like he lost that much of a step. So I don't know if I can say it enough that I think, don't be surprised if there's some circumstance where some injuries happen, some matchups, you know, don't materialize versus scheduled, and RDA slots into some sort of vacant lightweight title fight. Maybe it's him and Michael Chandler, you know, in the summer, who knows, right? We just don't know. MMA is so unpredictable. And in a fight against Chandler, I wouldn't count him out either. So the words, Rafael Dos Anjos, light UFC lightweight champion in the year of our Lord, 2021. Is not that crazy.
Jose, do you think it is that crazy, or do you agree with AK?
The only crazy part I would disagree with would be 2021. I don't think he's going to fight for the lightweight championship in the year 2021, just because there seems to be a lot of fights that need to happen first. So I don't, and I, again, if he got the title shot based off of like we had talked about, like being that standby fighter, I think that would be the best case scenario for him to get that lightweight title shot. And 100%, I think he could be anyone not named Khabib Nurmagomedov. But I would say the same thing about Justin Gaethje. I would say the same thing about Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor, Tony Ferguson, anyone in the top five at lightweight could be the champion of the world if Khabib Nurmagomedov retires. And I would throw Rafael Dos Anjos right in there. He could beat any one of those guys. If you do this big round robin, this big tournament of everyone fights everyone, and then you move forward, kind of like the World Cup, it would be hard, man. There's a lot of fights in there that I think would be 50-50 matchups. Of course, I would slightly favor some guys, but like if Conor fought Dustin Poirier, I would slightly favor Conor. That's had no way means Dustin Poirier can't win that fight because he is a completely different fighter from their first rematch. So I would absolutely group Rafael Dos Anjos into that category. Same as Michael Chandler, same as Dan Hooker. Any of those guys can be any of them on their best day unless they face Khabib Nurmagomedov, who's going to probably retire undefeated unless he fights George St. Pierre in either catchweight or if he goes up to 170. If George drops to 155, I would heavily favor Khabib Nurmagomedov, but that's an entirely different conversation we can have down the road if that ever happens. So, yeah, Rafael Dos Anjos could absolutely be the lightweight champion in the world. I just don't think it'll happen in 2021.
The moral of this round, ladies and gentlemen, is put respect on RDA's name, okay? Paul Felder is a freaking G for taking that fight. But Dos Anjos is also a G for accepting it and winning the fight. So we will see where he goes from here. The point for round one in this great matchup goes to Alex K. Lee. Very passionate. I'd like that. I dig that.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
AK on the board here as we head to a round of compare and contrast because the UFC had an interesting card. We talked about the main event. We had an insane knockout from one Chaos Williams in the co-main event. Some good performances, some bad weight cuts, and the removal of a few fights on Fight Week. And then Bellator, a couple of days prior to that, Thursday night, they had Bellator 252. And I have to say, personally speaking, it was a fantastic night for Bellator. Patricio Pitbull continues his dominance, knocking out Pedro Carvalho. Manuel Sanchez looked phenomenal. Aaron Pico was among a slew of great highlight reel finishes. This was the kind of card Bellator needed to get some buzz and get some positive juju going the way. So, Jose, we're going to begin with you. It's been a little while since we've had a conversation like this, but who won the week in your opinion, Bellator or the UFC?
I would probably say Bellator in terms of like what were the better fights, because Patricio Pitbull, like I've said this a million times, anytime you can watch the best at what someone does do what they do, it's a treat. And Patricio Pitbull is the greatest fighter in the history of Bellator. And there's this whole argument, like remember a couple months ago, like who had the better roster as a light heavyweight, like Bellator or the UFC, who had the better welterweight, Bellator or the UFC. We might be looking at the best featherweight in the world, and that's Patricio Pitbull. And I think what adds to this is Alexander Volkanovski responded to someone on Twitter with eye rolling emojis when someone said Patricio Pitbull said he was the best featherweight in the world. So not only our fans talking about it. The UFC featherweight champion of the world is responding, and he's playing into it. So, of course, it's Bellator, because everyone keeps saying, Bellator is the B-League, this and that, which is completely disrespectful, because Patricio Pitbull is one of the best fighters in the world. But now UFC champions are responding and reacting, and they know what's happening. So it's, of course, Bellator won this week. Yes, Paul Felder had the feel-good story. Yes, Rafael Dos Anjos picks up the W in his first fight at lightweight. But Patricio Pitbull was supposed to fight Pedro Carvalho months ago before the pandemic. They weighed in and stared down, and then the next day their fight gets canceled because of the pandemic hit. They basically have to weigh in completely. They have to go through their fight camp again, weigh in again, stare down again, all this stuff with the face mask, and then they fight in front of no one, and Patricio Pitbull puts them away in less than 3 minutes. So of course Bellator won this fight, because the face of their organization did what he does best and put on the best performance he could have hoped for. So yeah, I would absolutely say Bellator won. Plus, Emmanuel Sanchez wins, beats Dan Vichel. He moves on. Aaron Pico picks up a skull-rattling knockout, and he's one of the most marketable fighters in all of MMA, not just Bellator. So of course, everyone that I think Bellator would, I don't want to say Bellator hopes they would win, the more marketable fighters won. Aaron Pico, Patricio Pitbull, Cary Taylor Melendez. So I would say Bellator is the big winner of this weekend.
AK, who won the week in your opinion, the UFC or was it Bellator MMA?
Well, for that, I will just add that that's actually a good point, that none of their fighters slipped on the proverbial banana peel, as it was. And one guy we didn't mention, I do want to shout out Yaroslav Amosov, now 25-0 in MMA. Not easy to do. I don't care where you're fighting. And I think 8 of those fights were like in Bellator. So he's been fighting against good competition. And he was facing another unbeaten. So if anyone thinks this guy, and a very tough guy, and Logan Storley. So if anyone thinks that Amosov is kind of like can crushing, I assure you he is not. I think Ed Ruth, Dave Rickles are in there. But I'm going to give the filthy casual perspective here and say that UFC almost wins by default just by keeping the show together. After losing its main event and then having some late cancellations, you know, on Friday and Saturday. So it's almost an unfair question, because, like I said, because again, as long as the UFC runs an event, they're just always going to have more general interest. Bellator, you know, has to do something, like, they can't just have a great show. There has to be like something absolutely insane has to happen for them to win the battle as far as like recognition goes. So I'm not saying which one had the better card necessarily. I think comfortably, I think anyone who watched both cards would say Bellator 252. But as far as, again, what had more impact? I mean, still the guy people were talking about the most over this last week were Rafael Dos Anjos, because he was scheduled to be in the main event, and Paul Felder because of his incredible story of coming in on less than a week. So we've talked about them a lot. I won't dwell on that. Patricio Pitbull obviously has to be the third star. Has to be, again, if not number one, as Jose said, but he's in this unfortunate no man's land where, if he blows away and dominates his opponent as he did with Carvalho, then people say, oh, well, he's just fighting guys who aren't you know, a high level, you know, which is completely untrue. It's just he's so good, he's just so far ahead of his guys. So if he fights someone who people, and if it's a competitive fight, let's say he went 5 rounds with Carvalho back and forth, then it's the opposite. People are saying, oh, well, Pitbull's not that good, he couldn't even finish Carvalho in a round. So he really can't win right now. And I think something to sort of support my argument of why the UFC just kind of wins is, immediately after these fights, anytime Pitbull takes someone out now, and it was happening with Chandler too for the longest time when he was with Bellator, is the first thing we'll ask is, yeah, but how would he do in UFC? How do you do in UFC? Oh, this guy needs to go to UFC. He needs to stop fighting guys in Bellator. And I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm just giving the perspective of I think the way a lot of people view these things, unfortunately. And again, why I think they, objectively speaking, won the week, as it were, you know, whatever that means. I think people were still talking about RDA and the UFC. Even though, and RDA, UFC, and Paul Felder, even though, again, that card for me was subpar, I think. I would not call it one of the most entertaining cards of the year, to be generous. But I imagine people tuned in, and the takeaways that they'll take from it would be, you know, the main event, the Chaos Williams KO. And that's really enough to keep the UFC in the lead, fair or not.
All right, so you kind of alluded to it, AK. We wanted to incorporate one of our favorite segments, the three stars, into this topic, mm-hmm. because, you know, we get an even larger pool to choose from since we're talking about two events. And you can certainly make the argument that more stars could come from the UFC, more stars could come from Bellator. It was really a fun week to look back upon, kind of looking back at these performances. So who are your three stars coming out of these events? It seems like Patricio Pitbull is on there, but it's pretty wide open here. Who are the other two guys or gals?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mentioned Chaos Williams. I don't think it quite exploded as much as the Buckley KO. I really, no finishes is going to explode like the Buckley KO anytime soon, unless again someone does something just as crazy, maybe a two-footed head kick KO off of, like, you know, the leg getting caught. I don't know. We didn't see the Buckley KO coming. I shouldn't say, you know, that these things can happen, because it's MMA. Literally anything can happen. So yeah, I'm standing by kind of what I said about Dos Anjos and Felder being the biggest stars, but I'll put Pitbull over Chaos Williams, over anyone else who fought on Bellator, over anyone else who fought in the UFC. And I'll just elaborate a little bit more on this point of, like, kind of why he's not the number one star. It's, you know, people don't understand how good he is. The recent wins, again, I think Cavallo's high quality opponent, Archuleta, of course, the current bantamweight champion, Michael Chandler, super fight, lightweight champion, and then Emmanuel Sanchez, really tough. So, and that's just the last four. I mean, he's had a lot of great wins in his career. I'd probably rank him in the top five. Jose said maybe number one. I would definitely have him, just kind of give people an insight to, like, I think what I'm thinking and how other media people might be thinking. I'd rank him behind Volkanovski. I'd rank him behind Holloway and Ortega, but I'd have him ahead of Zombie, Yair, and Zabit. So maybe I'm underrating him a little bit, like, as far as the star of the week. Maybe he was number one. I'm still comfortable putting him third. I still feel like RDA and Felder were the most talked about. And I think their performances didn't let people down. So it's not just the buildup to their fight. Like I said, I thought RDA put together a really great, complete fight, reminded people why he's back in world title contention, as we've already discussed on the show. And Felder got so much credit. I mean, credit to Michael, props to Michael Bisping for helping out his broadcasting partner. Because if you asked him, it's like Felder might have won the fight. If you just listened to the Bisping commentary, he loved it. It was such a valiant performance in his eyes. And he wasn't far off. It really was an impressive performance for someone on 5 days fighting a world-class opponent who then later said he hadn't been in the gym, MMA gym training for 4 months. So I still had to put them above Patricio Pitbull.
All right, Jose. So AK's list is RDA, Felder, Patricio Pitbull. What is your three-star list? I can't hear you.
He just picked three of the four people in the main events. Like,
that's what I did. It's not hard.
It's like
it's
picking all the number one seeds to go to it's the final four in March of Madness. Like,
and guess what? It works a lot. If you want to go against Chalk, go for it. If you want to make this harder than it has to be, have at it. I'm not gonna do it.
Very few times has all four number ones ever made it to the final four all at the same time. I think it's only happened maybe twice, maybe three times. Anyway,
at least two of them have made it like 90% of the time. So it's not a bad strategy.
Sure. But I'm not in no specific order, because I don't really rank them like one, two, three. Patricio Pitbull, obviously. Anytime, again, like I said, the best at what they do. Like, not only showcases what they do well, but does it in an emphatic fashion, he has to be included on the list. I really think our own Guillermo Cruz did a phenomenal job covering this event when Patricio Pitbull and Pedro Carvalho, he did that piece where they interviewed each other. And anytime Guillermo does that, I am thoroughly entertained. But their level of trash talking was so unique, because they both speak the same language. Patricio Pitbull is obviously from Brazil, Pedro Carvalho from Portugal. So they both speak Portuguese. So it was very fun read. And there was this level of kind of animosity between them. And Patricio Pitbull, of course, tweeted that Brazil is still the king, which alludes to the healthy rivalry they have in the soccer world between Pedro Carvalho. I mean, between Portugal and Brazil. So Patricio Pitbull, of course, greatest Bellator fighter who ever lived, doing so as a featherweight, lightweight champ. And I honestly think he could drop to bantamweight, because he's not the biggest featherweight. He could be a natural bantamweight like Frankie Edgar. And with Juan Archuleta holding that belt, Patricio Pitbull could be a triple champ in my mind. He could be the lightweight, featherweight, and bantamweight champion. Whether Bellator wants to allow him to do that and hold up three divisions, because if they want to do like a bantamweight Grand Prix, he would have to hold up two divisions at that point. I don't think they want that. So Patricio Pitbull, of course. I'll throw in Aaron Pico, because Aaron Pico made the media rounds right after. He was on the TMZs. He was on Instagram. He was on all this stuff. So Aaron Pico was on that devastating losing streak of back-to-back violent knockouts to Adam Borch and Henry Corrales. When everyone thought Aaron Pico was the next coming of Jesus Christ and he was going to be the new George St. Pierre and he could walk on water and turn water into wine and everything. And then he goes on this losing streak to back-to-back violent knockouts. Like I said, and all of a sudden he's a bust, never should have been signed, should never fight in the main event. How dare you consider him to be this big protege, the next George St. Pierre. And now he's quietly rattled off a few very impressive wins in the way he should be winning against the level of competition he is facing. He should be winning this way. So he's doing what he needs to do. With him at Jackson's, with him and Brandon Gibson, he is a completely new fighter. And then he calls out, who does he call out? Henry Corrales and Adam Borch, not because he hates them, but because they made him better martial artists, and he wants to go challenge them and get that win back. So I'll throw in Aaron Pico, and then, of course, I'll throw in Chaos Williams just because he got another knockout. And I'm not including Dos Anjos and Felder because we've talked about them ad nauseum, and we don't need to spend more time talking about those two because they're fantastic. Chaos Williams, Casey and I were at his fight in Houston when he knocked out Moreno, and it was absolutely devastatingly violent. And then he goes and he turns right around and he gets another one. In less than a minute. I think someone said that he's on some sort of list of most sub-minute knockouts in like one calendar year or something crazy like that. I don't know the exact stat, but he's up there with like Rumble Johnson in terms of that. And then all of a sudden people are saying, if he turns around and gets one more win and wins the same way again, why isn't he fighter of the year? How come we're not talking about him instead of Hamza? Like if he turns around and fights on like 11 days notice against another sub-minute knockout and he gets three like sub-minute knockouts in one calendar year, and all of a sudden he's fired the air, we should be promoting him instead of Hamza. And then I can't remember off the top of my head, but apparently he was wearing some sort of pin to bring awareness. And it's really going to bother me because I wrote it down and I can't find my notes anywhere. He's wearing a pin to promote awareness for some sort of cause, and he uses platform spectacularly with the best suit I've seen in years. So I'll throw Chaos Williams into my three stars of the weekend.
It was for autism awareness, which now that you mention it, I'm embarrassed. I did not give him a one of Felder or Dos Anjos' spots.
I'll say Chaos Williams because he promoted autism awareness and had the flyest suit of the year.
Yeah, it was a fun week. It was a great night for Bellator. Let's see if they can keep it up this week. Pretty good card on Thursday. We mentioned the main event. You get Benson Henderson back against Jason Jackson. Jeremy Kennedy makes his Bellator debut against fellow former UFC featherweight Matt Bissette. Baby Slice is back. Kevin Lee's brother is fighting Rafion Stotts. Keith Lee should be a good card, but it's a good matchup here on BTL. The point for round two goes to Jose Youngs.
Yeah,
Jose Youngs has evened up the matchup. Sean Alshadi, I'll show you paying too. Attention. There you
I
go.
Would get him that one too.
I mean, you basically gave it away.
I can't believe I forgot about the Cass Williams, the autism awareness thing, that lapel that he was wearing. I totally forgot.
Yes.
So let us move ahead to the next offering for the Ultimate Fighting Championship, UFC 255. And we've talked about this quite a bit over the last few weeks on the live preview and post shows. This thing is flying under the radar amongst fans. We get two flyweight title fights, Davison Figueiredo defending for the first time against Alex Perez. We get Valentina Shevchenko, one of the best fighters on planet Earth, regardless of gender, defends her title against Jennifer Maia. Interesting main card. Prelims have a lot of cool things on it, but for some reason, this one is just not generating any buzz. So we're going to go ahead and attempt to do the fans, maybe in some degree, the UFC a little bit of a solid and try to sell this card because I think it's super underrated heading into it. So AK, you are the Prince of Positivity after all. You're going to put your promoter hat on and listen, maybe, you know what? Maybe you're going to take that promoter hat and throw it in the garbage. Maybe you're not into this card as much as I am. But either way, give us your thoughts on UFC 255. Why should folks tune in and spend their hard-earned $65 or maybe... you feel they should save their money on this one. What do you think?
Oh, no. If there's anything, I'm going to throw in the garbage. It's the scheduled lineup for this card. Because, first of all, I would have had Valentina in the main event. Okay? I'm not saying that I expect that to be a better fight than Figueiredo and Perez. I actually think the Figueiredo-Perez fight is really good. But at some point, I think you have to realize what you have in Shevchenko. I'm not saying she's a Rousey level, John Jones level, McGregor level star. I'm not saying she's that. She's that tier. But she's in the next tier of someone who I think is really marketable, is someone people, at least the majority of dedicated MMA fans, will pay their hard-earned money for. And those are the people you want to retain and appease, you know what I mean? And some of them will bring in a little extra casual interest, you know, tell their friends about it. And that's good. So whatever you get, that's just gravy, right? So I would have had her as the main event. I think she's got the kind of personality for it. This is her fourth defense of the world title. If we're talking about same weight classes, I would have gone with the fighter who's had more title defenses and really dominant, right? So That's kind of the first move I would have made. I don't think there was anything we can do about that. I don't think they're going to change that. But again, I'm going way back and I'm bending the rules a bit. I would have gone all in on the flyweights too. I know as soon as people hear that, they'll be like, that's pay-per-view poison. You know what I mean? They couldn't sell pay-per-views to Demetrius Johnson, the greatest flyweight of all time at the top. When Henry Cejudo was doing super fights, doing that super fight with Dillashaw, that wasn't like a huge drawing event, right? So I get it. I get it. Sounds crazy. But as we said, it's under the radar. It's not generating this crazy amount of buzz anyway. So you may as well go all in and you know, go back to the kind of the old thing of like, oh, this is the fastest division in sports, or tell people it's the most skilled, tell people it's hot. This is marketing team's job. Okay. You don't have to tell 100% the truth. Follow your boss, Dana White, and really sell this. And I would have put Brandon on. Brandon obviously would have been in the main card, Roy Val versus Moreno. Maybe not all fights. Like I said, there's a Shogun fight, which I think you have to put on there. Putting that in the prelims would be crazy. I don't think anyone would stand for that. But this is kind of my third point I was going to make, was friggin' Mike Perry, get the F out of here, all the way out of here. Okay. We don't need this guy. If it was the Robbie Lawler fight, I completely understand it. There's no way I'm saying bump that off the main card. But him and Tim Means, with respect to Means, that could have been the prelims. I would have bumped up one of the flyweight cards. Good for Means for taking that fight. But, I mean, Mike Perry's trash. And the farther we get him away from a card, the better marketed that card can be. That's in my mind. So those are three things that I would have done.
The crowd is erupting to that answer. Jose, your thoughts on this card? Should people spend their $65 on it?
Yeah, I mean, but I'm also a huge mixed martial arts fan. Like, if you're telling me to sell it to the casual fans, they're not going to listen to me, because the casual fans will tune in to watch Jon Jones, Conor McGregor, the heavyweight champions of the world. I mean, we made up a belt for Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal, and that was if not the highest selling pay per views of the year. So I'm not going to try to sell it to them, because their opinion doesn't matter. So Davidson Figueiredo versus Alex Perez and Valentina Shevchenko versus Jennifer Maia. Those are two awesome fights. I'm not as like offended by the layout of the card as most people. I get their arguments, but I don't particularly care, because from the amount of fighters that I've talked to, they don't really care when they fight. Like, a lot of fighters actually prefer fighting sooner. A lot of them prefer fighting on the preliminary cards. I know your interview with Brandon Royval, he was like, people aren't even going to buy the pay-per-view, so this is the actual main event. So if that's the attitude he's taking, good on him for getting the slot he wants. Who are we to argue against it? If he got the actual person entering a cage to fist fight a human being, if he has no complaints, I don't know why we should have any complaints, because we're not the ones getting inside of a cage fist fighting another human being. Figueiredo versus Cody Garbrandt would have made sense as the main event, because Cody Garbrandt is obviously probably the biggest name of the four between Figueiredo, him, Valentina, and Maya, which is unfortunate, because Valentina, I think, could be the best female fighter of all time. I know she has the two losses to Amanda Nunes, and I'm talking solely like the talent, like how talented she is. People compare it to like a female James Bond. I'm all for that comparison, because she knows like 1,000 languages. She's always shooting guns, throwing knives, jumping out of planes, doing photo shoots, and then she goes out there and just gets crazy spinning wheel kicks on Jessica Guy. So yes, 100% on favor of the James Bond comparison. So but would you spend money on it? 100%. I think Figueiredo is the only thing holding him back from being not a megastar, crossover star, but from being one of the most interesting fighters in the UFC is the fact that he doesn't speak English. Some of the, like, our own Gary McCrew spoke to him after his big win over Joe B on the first Fight Island card. And he was like laying out a lot of the jobs he had. He was a mason, he was a sushi chef, he was a hairdresser, he was a taxi driver. He did all of these weird things. And I am all in favor of Davidson Figueiredo going back to his old job with his championship belt and just showing us and doing those jobs. Would you watch that? I would, if we saw Davidson Figueiredo making sushi with his big championship belt on and then giving them to the customers. I'm all in favor of it. He also takes phenomenal photo shoots with all the cows and horses he owns. The only thing holding him back from being the most interesting man in the UFC is the fact he doesn't speak English, which is unfortunate, because he is by far the most violent flyweight in the world. If people want to get sold on the Contender Series, Alex Perez is absolutely phenomenal. The only person he's lost to is Joseph Benavidez. He's beaten everyone else. Everyone complaining about flyweights not getting stoppage wins, Alex Perez has those. Davidson Figueiredo has those. If that doesn't sell you, I'm sorry, you're a lost cause to me.
All right, Jose, let me go back to you because, as you mentioned, we have two very dangerous champions defending their titles. Right now, Figueiredo, more than a 3-1 favorite. He's around a minus 315 in the betting lines. Valentina Shevchenko, anywhere from a minus 1250 to a minus 1800 favorite over Jennifer Maia. And I know that for those who are watching you and have watched the preview shows, they know that you give a 1% chance for anybody to win most of these fights. In your heart of hearts, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely will we see an Ann New on Saturday night?
1%. 1%. That's only because, like, there are obviously some fights. Like, I knew Khabib was going to beat Conor. I knew Ronda was going to beat Bechgohea. There are just some fights that you are so positive that the other person is going to win, you give him 100% chance. I give Jennifer Maia a 1% chance because, yes, she has missed weight, which is the big knock against her, but she's also, like, she's beaten Alexa Davis, Roxanne Modafari. She just tapped Joanne Calderwood, and she's only lost to people who have fight for the title, who's like Callum Chukagian, Liz Carmouche, Valentina, as both beaten. So I would give her a 1% chance because she's very good on the ground. She comes from a shoot-to-boxing background, so I don't want to disrespect any of her training camp. So 1% chance, but that is about as small a 1% chance if I've given any fighter in a very long time. I think I'm pretty confident when I say Valentina should get this done inside three rounds.
What about Perez?
Perez, I'll give, that's a tough one. 25%. He's an awesome fighter, but I just think he got outclassed by Joe B. And I think Joe B could be the fourth best flyweight in the world behind Demetrius Johnson, Henry Cejudo, and Davison Figueiredo. And I still think Demetrius Johnson's the best flyweight in the world. I think Henry Cejudo is the second best, and Figueiredo just happens to be the most violent of the three, but that can oftentimes be a detriment when you're fighting these guys with such high IQs, fight IQs, like Demetrius Johnson, Henry Cejudo. Alex Perez is awesome. I just think Davison Figueiredo is a whole nother beast entirely. When he hits people, their face changes. So I'd give Alex Perez maybe a 25% chance of winning. But I think that fight is going to be absolutely awesome.
So AK, on a scale of 1 to 10, Jose is giving it around a 1.75 that we would see in Ann New. He's giving 1% for Maia to win. Oh. 2.5% for 2.5 out of 10 for, I suck at fraction math, so we're not even going to go there, but around a 1.75. What say you? On a scale of 1 to 10?
I think he's giving a 0.01 out of 10 for shift. Why did we start doing math, Mike?
Yeah.
You're the host. You're supposed to stop these things.
All right. So let's just say 1 to 10 for you. What are the chances that we have one new champion crowned on Saturday?
Sorry, Mike. Could you repeat that? My audio broke off for a second.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how likely will we see a new champion on Saturday?
Man, I'm going to go... I probably like Perez's chances a little more, even than Jose. Again, I wouldn't go past like 50%, but... So if I'm not going past 50%, and I don't think Shevchenko loses, out of 10, I'll go 4 out of 10. I know that doesn't sound super exciting, but that might be higher than some. I bet you, if you ask most fans, they're probably going 1 or 2 out of 10. They don't see either Figueiredo or Shevchenko losing. But I actually really do like Alex Perez's chances. I think the Joe B fight was a sign of kind of how much further he had to go. But again, that was 2 years ago. That for me was the kind of loss that he learned a lot. I think he learned a lot from. And if they fought again, if he fought Benavidez again, I would probably favor Perez. So saying that, I think he's a much, much improved fighter. And I do like his chances against Figueiredo. The Figueiredo, I think as we've said after the beating, he had to beat Benavidez the second time, does look like he has the makings of being maybe one of the next dominant UFC champions. But I'm going to need to see this first defense, how he handles this first defense to really be convinced. So, I'm a petty person, so I actually want to pick up on one thing Jose mentioned earlier. I like that he said Shevchenko knows like a million languages. It's such an American thing to say. I think she knows like 4. I know for Americans, that's like a lot. That's like a million. That's like, you know, you uncultured swine. That's like a million languages. I think she's probably like Kyrgyz, Russian. Kyrgyz, I would assume. And then Spanish and English. That's 4 languages. It's very impressive, but guys, it's not a million. It's a lot of, you know, it's very common in other countries, more cultured countries, Canada being one of them, of course.
You still talking about this, bro? Move on.
Yeah, I'm very petty. to answer the question, 4 out of 10. 4 out of 10. I think Perez does have a really solid chance, though.
math and foreign language, just what you wanted to see here on Between the Links. We're going to continue on this somewhat in our next segment, but I'm telling you, I have this UFC 199 vibe to this card where people want to skip it, but it ends up being really good, and you end up getting upset that you didn't watch it. But don't get pissed at me if I'm wrong. But as it stands right now, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. But the point for round three goes to Jose Youngs. He takes the lead. He takes the lead here. I love your positivity, AK.
I sense a robbery review coming. I'm just saying. I'm already fired up.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
Beloved brands know customer relationships are everything. That's why over 130,000 trust Klaviyo to power smarter digital relationships across their websites, emails, SMS, and reviews. And now, there's Klaviyo AI, your guide to smarter insights, decisions, work, and results. Brands like Everyman Jack trust Klaviyo AI to personalize product recommendations that keep customers coming back. Discover Klaviyo AI at klaviyo.com/Vox. That's klaviyo.com/Vox.
Good. This is perfect. Just the question that you want to talk about because you're excited for this one. So I figured we'd round off regulation this week with one of the big talking points recently. It's the fighter of the year topic. I know it was briefly mentioned on the show earlier, but this year is pretty wide open right now, and you can make an argument for a lot of people, and some are champions, some are not. But one who knows, maybe more of those options, potential nominees, are competing this Saturday at UFC 255. So Davison Figueiredo has been a name thrown out there quite a bit. So, Jose, we're going to start with you here. Sure, there's still some fights left, but for the most part, fighters of the year are typically fighters who are champions or who could win champions. And if Figgy goes out there and beats Alex Perez and does so decisively, is he now the front runner for fighter of the year with his two wins over Benavidez, winning and defending the title? But the one negative knock against him, he does have a weight miss. So where does a win over Perez put him in this conversation?
If he wins on Saturday, I would probably put him number one, but that's not a locked in number one, because like you said, it's usually champions, and it's unfortunate this year a lot of the champions have been tied up. A lot of the other promotions had to take those long pauses. Like if Pitbull had gone on this run and won the featherweight Grand Prix decisively, we could be talking about him as fighter of the year. But because there was that gap in action of everyone outside of the UFC, we really can only look at the UFC. If Figueiredo wins on Saturday, I would probably put him number one. But that's to say, like, if Kevin Holland goes out there and beats Jack Hermanson, he goes to 5-0 in 2020, and beat Jack Hermanson, who is one of the best middleweights in the world, like a legitimate middleweight contender. If he had beaten Darren Till, we could be talking about him maybe fighting Robert Whittaker for a number one contender spot. If Kevin Holland goes out there and beats Jack Hermanson, we have to talk about him. If Khamzat Chimaev goes 3-0 in the span of like 60 days, and then goes and beats Leon Edwards. He's an unranked fighter, and all of a sudden beats Leon Edwards, who has a legitimate argument to be fighting for the welterweight championship of the world right now. Khamzat Chimaev probably beats Leon Edwards and then fights the winner of Burns and Usman. I can see it. I can see it coming. The UFC really wants that. Dana is very high on Khamzat. He had his own media scrum on the second Fight Island card. He sat next to Dana White octagon side during the fight. So if Khamzat beats Leon Edwards, you have to throw him in there. So if everyone wins that I said, it's going to come down to Figueiredo, Kevin Holland, Khamzat Chimaev. I have a feeling the fans are going to lean toward Khamzat Chimaev because he's the most popular. But Kevin Holland beating Jack Hermanson, you have to really seriously take into consideration, because he also cut weight to fight Trevin Giles. When his fight fell out, he's called everyone out. He even offered to fight Ed Herman after Trevin Giles fell out. And Ed Herman was obviously, he couldn't be reached. So Kevin Holland was getting ready to take a short notice opponent on like 30 minutes, let alone one day. So you'd have to throw those two in. But if he wins on Saturday, Figueiredo for me would be the front runner.
AK, what do you think?
Well, we all know, as I mentioned, I think in an earlier appearance, Mike, Kamaru Usman is already my fighter of the year pick far away. So really, I, I have to stick to it, right? What kind of man would I be if I didn't say? No, anyway, anyone who didn't see one of my past appearances, I panicked. I panicked during a question, and I picked Kamara's man in front of the year. I'm not proud of it, but I'll own it. I'm just saying. I know it happened. People can check the tapes. I'm not going to deny it. So obviously, it's not Usman's. He would have been up there if the Gilbert Burns fight, pardon me, had not been postponed, and he beat Gilbert Burns. And Gilbert Burns also would have been in there if he had beaten Usman. So, which I'll kind of say the same for this question before I kind of get into my other possible picture fight of the year is, I think if Perez beats Figueroa, man, he kind of is in that top for fight of the year. I was just looking at his resume. So he also beat this year Formiga. And what was the other?
Espinoza.
Yeah. So that's, and then obviously you put Figueroa on top of that. Then in this year, which unfortunately has been hit by the pandemic and has prevented a lot of champions from fighting more than once, a lot of stars from fighting more than once or twice, Perez's resume would be right up there. And again, I think since a lot of people are viewing it as a pretty big upset, you know, that adds to the story. A lot of people like to see that. It would have to probably be like a knockout, something like that. But I think even something convincing, a knockout or even like a lopsided decision, like if he just outworks Figueroa for five rounds, I think that would get some people on his side. It sounds crazy to say Alex Perez fighter of the year, but it sounds just crazy to say Kevin Holland. I mean, Kevin Holland, like we said, could be the fighter of the year. So for me, though, just to sort of argue against Figueroa, who I think is a great fighter, but to say why I'm not, I don't think he's best for the year. Two wins over Benavidez, as great as Benavidez is, it's tough. It's like two guys against the same opponent. The second fight shouldn't have even happened because he should have made weight. You could argue that he would have gotten another opponent instead of Benavidez if he had made weight for that first fight. Like, there's a lot of sort of little factors you can take into consideration to say why Figueroa's sort of arc in 2020 would have been different and arguably better if he hadn't had to fight Benavidez twice. But again, just with the data we have, I don't know if he's the front runner for me for fight of the year. And again, it's not his fault. Most of these fighters, champions, could only fight one or two times. So I get it. Him winning three title fights, even if it's two against the same opponent, I get why he puts him up there. Would not be the front of my list, I don't think. We'll have to see. But other names, I mean, I'm looking at like Blachowicz, you know, two fights, yes, but won a title. Shevchenko, maybe two dominant wins. But I know people don't view her quality of competition as being that high, which might remove her from it. Holland, he's just missing that signature win. Hermanson, of course, would be it. So I think he takes the lead if he wins. And then you have a bunch of other stars who have kind of fought twice. I got like Calvin Kattar on there, Yan Xiaonan, Chris Cyborg, two title fight wins, adding another title to her. I don't think a lot of people are going to put her on the list. She might make my top five. Again, competition, whatever. People can judge it how they want. And one little sleeper, Carla Esparza, who could go 3-0 if she beats Ribas. But to answer just the question, I really can't give my fighter of the year pick just yet. Clearly, I'm not qualified to do it. I think we found that out. But I can say why I don't. But I mean, that is my argument for why I don't think a win over Perez necessarily makes Figueroa the front runner for fighter of the year.
Yeah, Esparza will not be in that conversation because she's not fighting Amanda Ribas anymore. Ribas is now fighting. Ribas is fighting Michelle Waterson in January now. Oh.
And to think I just didn't line up. To think I do a matchmaking show.
It's all good. I will say, AK, you made a very good point. You made a very, very good point, and I want to get Jose's take on this. What if Alex Perez? What if he beats Davison Figueroa? Is this fight potentially for the front runner for fighter of the year? Because no one's talking about Alex Perez, and his resume stacks up. Finishes of Jordan Espinoza, finishes Juicier Formiga with leg kicks, which is just gnarly and nasty to watch. If he goes out there and finishes Davison Figueroa, that is an impressive year, and he caps it off with the championship. Is he the front runner if he wins?
Probably, but like probably. 3-0, he would be the front runner on Saturday. But like I said, there would be other fights like the Holland fight and the Hamzat fight. Like, what if Jennifer Maia wins and she's 2-0 and she beats Joanne Calderwood and Valentina Shevchenko, who were supposed to fight in June? She knocks off the 1-2 fighter in the world, back-to-back fight. So there's a lot of what ifs we could talk about. So yes, if Alex Perez wins, he's probably the front runner on Saturday. Same as Figueroa. And if Maia somehow pulls a horseshoe out of her ass, she could be up there too. But we have to see how Saturday plays out first.
All right, AK, actually, Jose, I'll go back to you on this because we mentioned like the non-champions that could win this award. We got Hamzat Chimaev, obviously tons of buzz, 3-0, about to headline against Leon Edwards. There's Kevin Holland, 4-0, a lot of buzz, getting ready to headline against Jack Hermanson on December 5th. There's also guys like Brandon Royval. If he beats Brandon Moreno, three very quality wins, probably out-resumes both of those guys, if we're being honest, considering rankings and who they're fighting and stuff, because Brandon Moreno is the number two ranked guy in this division. In a lot of people's eyes, the number one ranked guy in this division, the guy that should be fighting for the title on Saturday. But Is there a chance, like, whose resume stacks up better? If we're talking these three guys, if all three of these guys win, all three of these guys do so impressively, are you giving it to a guy like Roybal? Are you giving it to a guy like Holland? Or are you giving it to Shamaev based on resume and what they put together?
It's three very different scenarios in my mind, because Roybal would have beaten three quality opponents back to back to back, which is phenomenal. And he would have to be in the conversation. On the flip side, Kevin Holland, who's 4-0 right now, but is fighting competition that is right on his level in terms of where he is in his career. If he beats Jack Hermanson, that is one of the biggest upsets, if not the biggest upsets of 2020. So you have to take that into account, like him fighting up, taking a massive step up in competition on short notice to save a card in his first main event. You have to take that into consideration. And then Khamzat fighting Leon Edwards, because like we said, Leon Edwards was supposed to fight Tyron Woodley. If he had gotten that fight, I think Leon Edwards would have won. He could be fighting for the championship, not Gilbert Burns. Leon Edwards is also an actual welterweight. Khamzat hasn't, let's not forget, Khamzat has fought basically two middleweights and a lightweight that move up to welterweight in Rhys McKee. So it would be his first welterweight. Leon Edwards is the level of competition going from Rhys McKee, and Gerald Meerschaert to all of a sudden Leon Edwards is a huge jump. It's probably the biggest jumps I've seen in a very long time in the UFC in terms of like four fights in such a short amount of time. So it's three different scenarios. And if they all win, they're all in the conversation, but it also depends on how they win. If Kevin Holland sneaks out a decision, that's still a win over a massive. If for whatever reason he goes out there and knocks out, or if God forbid submits Jack Hermanson in the first round, I would put him at the top of the list, because that's Jack Hermanson's bread and butter, knockouts and ground game. So we have to see how they win first, but I don't look at them all in the same scenario.
All right, AK, let's just say it's the end of the year and we're thinking about December. Let's say Kevin Holland goes in there and finishes Jack Hermanson in the first or second round of the main event. Then all eyes are on Khamzat Chimaev. Let's just say Khamzat Chimaev knocks out Leon Edwards in the first and second round. So if we're talking about like non-championship winning fighters of the year, if both of those guys get great finishes, who are you giving it to, Holland or Shamaev?
Taking into account all their other fights as well, an impressive win over Hermanson would mean a little bit more to me than an impressive win over Edwards. You can't really compare the rankings. I think Hermanson is higher ranked, and not even kind of the stupid thing with the UFC taking Edwards out of the rankings temporarily. I think Hermanson is higher ranked at middleweight than Edwards is at light welterweight. I could be wrong. But either way, taking into account the other wins that Holland has and the other wins that Chimaev has, I like Holland's resume a little bit better if he wins in impressive fashion, as opposed to if Chimaev wins in impressive fashion. Chimaev, with a win over Edwards, will be the runaway newcomer / breakout fighter of the year, however you want to put it. Sometimes guys from that also make it onto the fight of their year list.
Leon Edwards is number three, and Jack Hermanson is number four.
Okay. So close, but it would still mean more to me, I think, to see Holland get that impressive win, compared to Chimaev doing the same thing to Edwards. Chimaev will be the front runner for breakout fight of the year. Yeah, there's like Sean Brady's on there, Daniel Rodriguez, Dvalishvili. Guys who, not necessarily guys who debuted, but yeah, breakout, right? So he'd win that easily. Does it make him the fighter of the year? I would lean towards Holland. I think Ontiveros, newcomer, sure, but I think Darren Stewart, Buckley, and Hernandez, I think are better than like the McKee sort of, the McKee and Phillips wins. Meerschaert might have the edge over some of those names, but it's really, really close. But again, a few more, one more win for Holland. I think the quality competition was just a little bit higher, and I think the Hermanson win would mean just a little bit more. So Holland, man, he might be the fighter of the year.
What a crazy year this is. This is going to be a long-lasting conversation as we approach December 19th and beyond, and the awards will be given out, and it's going to be a difficult one to do. But as far as this conversation goes, it will continue. It will continue. Because AK Lee, you have tied things up, my friend. Nicely done. I might have to take back what I just said, but
I'm so sorry.
You know, the phony, so phony pistols aside, we'll head to the knockout round.
If incorrectly predicting Carlos Esparza is going to fight in a few weeks is not enough to give me the point, then finger guns isn't.
I went for a spin kick. I whiffed on it. I fell. It happens. It happens to the best of us. I fell on my butt.
two things. One, everybody makes mistakes. And two, everybody who watches the show knows exactly what's going to happen anyways. We're going to the snuck around question.
I'm glad you said it.
Listen, everybody knows this by now. Everybody knows that I'm a coward.
As far as I'm concerned, I know the comments below are going to say, I'm up 4-0. Mm.
I hope those shots I just fired off, we can still be monetized after those live rounds that I just fired. So I do apologize for that celebration, for that obscene celebration. And let's just get back to business.
Frankly, I want to see more. And thank you. And I just want to hear how AK performs in the knockout round. And for those of you who are new to the program, the knockout round will consist of one question. The competitors have no idea what this question is, and they will have 60 seconds to answer. Once they do, we will turn it over to the judge, the jury, and the executive producer, Casey Lydon, and he will render the final verdict. Jose, you are last week's winner. Would you like to go first or exercise the winner's option and pass it on over to Mr. AK Lee?
Mr. AK Lee can go first.
Okay. Just like I wanted. As people who watch the show know, Mike, I'm at my strongest in round five. When round five comes, I'm a new man.
All I'm going to say is that you need to thank the PFL and Fabricio Werdum for coming to an agreement, because had they not, you would have hated the question I was going to go with. So, but we have to go with this. Big news surfaced. Fabricio Werdum, as you may know by now as you're watching this, who apparently is the freaking Tom Brady of MMA. I'm not even going to address the tomfoolery from that press release. But anyways, so Fabricio Werdum, no longer a free agent. He has signed with the Professional Fighters League and will compete during their 2021 season. And there seemed to be a lot of options for Werdum coming out of his win over Alexander Gustafsson, but the PFL didn't honestly seem like one of the top ones, at least in my mind. A lot of talks about Bellator, maybe having the rematch with Fedor, one, but he signs with the PFL. So what are your thoughts on this move? And do you feel like this was the way to go for the former UFC heavyweight champion of the world? 60 seconds are going to be on the clock in a matter of seconds. There they are. Your time starts now.
Well, first of all, thank you for PFL CEO Peter Murray for so eloquently summing up Fabricio Werdum's career as, yes, the Tom Brady. We've often said, you guys are from New England, I'm sure you guys say all the time that Tom Brady is the Fabricio Werdum of quarterbacking in football. So it goes both ways, guys. It goes both ways. But I think it's an incredible move. I love it. I love almost any time a quality fighter goes to PFL, not just because it's good for the league, but also I usually give them better than good odds to win it. No disrespect to some of the talent that they've grown in the PFL. There's some good guys in there, but I cannot lie. I had to look up who won the last last PFL heavyweight tournament and that $1 million prize. So Ali Isaev, for anyone who's wondering, I did not remember that at all. That's on me, by the way. That's not on the league, and that's not on Isaev. You know, credit to them. I've had a great performance. But Werdum has a shot to end his career with winning $1 million. If he sticks around, maybe do the Lance Palmer, maybe win an easy $2 million. How can you go against that? We all want to see the Fedor fight, but this is a great choice for Fabricio Werdum.
All right, Jose, same question for you. 60 seconds about to hit the clock. Fabricio Werdum signs with the Professional Fighters League. Your time starts now.
I think it's fine. It's fine. If he wants to win $1 million, I'm all for people entering the octagon getting paid. What I think is going to be easy money for Fabricio Werdum, he's easily the favorite to win. We can also have some fun light heavyweight matches. Like, you remember when Brandon Lochner jumped over, he had that random fight before he was going to enter the contest. Like, I know Vinny Magalhaes beat Fabricio Werdum in the 2011 ADCC finals. So if they want to run that back in MMA, I'm fine with that. But I was really hoping Werdum would either hop over to Bellator so we could see the Fedor rematch, maybe in a ring on a Ryzen New Year's Eve show, or hop over to ONE Championship. Werdum versus Bader would have been a fun fight. But if we're strictly looking at this as Werdum wants to an easy paycheck before he calls it a career, that's fine with me. All power to him. He's one of the five greatest heavyweights, I'd probably say, in MMA history. So if he wants to go out with $1 million, so be it.
All right. Fabricio Werdum signs with the Professional Fighters League. And now this matchup in terms of the debates has come to an end. We turn it over to Casey Lydon, the judge, to render the final decision. Casey, who wins?
Well, I'm sorry. I was Googling Tom Brady. I never heard of the guy. So one moment.
The truck always on top of things.
Oh, he plays sprats ball. Cool. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I see. All right. Well, let me tally the points up. Jose did call the PFL cage an octagon.
I did.
which I did actually approve of. Your winner, Mr. Jose Youngs.
Oh man, what a battle!
You know, it's probably a bad sign when I'm nodding along with some of his choices for Purdue. You guys didn't see how off. He was saying stuff in his last question. I was off camera going like, that's pretty good. That's probably not a good sign.
Well, there you go. Jose Youngs, victorious yet again. And with that, you get 30 seconds to talk about whatever it is you want to talk about, good, bad, indifferent in the sport of mixed martial arts. Maybe a recall out of Mr. Alshadi, whatever you want to say, sir.
Well, let's get one thing straight. This 3-2 decision is right up there with Paul Felder getting one of the judges' scorecard. This was a clean sweep. This was 5-0. We didn't need a championship round. I know the comments are going to agree with me because, come on, it's 5-0. I beat AK Lee. I beat him. Fair and square. But all power to him. He stepped up on short notice because Sean Alshadi decided to once again run away. But I guess he gets some sort of pass because Chris Paul is now in the Phoenix Suns. Sayonara, Kelly Oubre. Thank you so much for everything you did for the city of Phoenix. Phoenix Carnival, I don't want to call you out because I respect the hell out of you. And you are one of the few MMA reporters who I see eye to eye with on both comic books and music. But if you want to go, come, because we all know I won that first time we threw down. And I think she does too. So either one, bring them forth and they can lose. I don't want to talk about what's his name. Ned, whatever his name is, he's gone. He's out of the picture. He's off cosplaying as Binky from Arthur. He's out of the equation. But hey, Kaylee, thank you for stepping up and losing once again.
So respectful right there. So respectful. AK, you're the man. I appreciate it, my friend.
Of course. Anytime. Anytime. You know what? These are free title shots for me. It's all gravy. You know, these are all, I'm like a Uriah Faber. Give me Frankie Edgar. Give me all the title shots. I don't care. Just give it to me. I don't need to earn them.
Holly Holm, right?
Holly Holm. Give me all the title shots.
I love it. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Between the Links. Of course, UFC 255 going down on Saturday. Jose Youngs, I believe you will be in Sin City with all the coverage.
Sure will.
Excellent. Sure will. So that means the weigh-in show is back. AK, you have something to look forward to. I do as well. No one does it like Alexander Kaylee. He gets excited. He barely even sleeps the night before. He just wants to get in there and talk about weigh-ins and all sorts of craziness. So we appreciate that. And so stick with us. Lots of fun stuff going on this week. In the meantime, for Alex K. Lee, for Jose Youngs, Casey Ladin on the production, Esther Lynn with the intro, I am Mike Heck. We'll see you back here once again next week, Between the Links. Good night, everybody.
This has been Between the Links with your host, Mike Heck. Brought to you by MMA Fighting, a production of Vox Media.
Listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andre Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.